Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Clever Content Podcast, a podcast from Content OD, a content agency based in Sheffield. I feel like I've said content a lot already. This is where we talk you through some of the notable content-related news and happenings in our world and from around the internet. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the importance of user research and, on the opposite side of that coin, hostile content. Very hostile content. And then Tom's here. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Tom's going to share news of Reddit's new live streaming service and his saucy experiences of chat roulette. So that was a joke. Now I'm worried you are actually going to share some saucy experiences.
I might do. Stay tuned.
Of chat roulette. So, yes, I've been reading Content Design. This is a book with pages by Sarah Richards. So Sarah Richards is the person who I think led the very first content team at GDS, Government's Digital Service, way back when. And they were responsible for putting in lots of kind of new practices, new approach to writing content and developing content for that kind of huge web project, which a lot of people will remember if they live in the UK. The whole point of the project was to pull lots of different government sites into one unified kind of design and approach. So Sarah Richards led the content team for that, and she kind of came up with this term content design. So yet another job title for content people. We got content strategists, content writers, content managers, content...
Everything you can throw words at.
Indeed, content design, but I quite like it as a term. I think it kind of...
Was this like to do with accessibility and things like that, that kind of project, or was it...
That is part of it.
That's fine.
It is partly about accessibility, but certainly the whole project was gov.uk, which was the site that came out the other end, was to try and pull all of this stuff together. We had lots of websites, which were all kind of microsites, content all over the place. And they looked different, they worked different. And the idea was that everything would look the same and have a system behind it, content system and a design system. So
this is legitimately the first time I've heard about this project. So.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's a new, brand new one for me.
Okay.
Well, we're all learning together.
Indeed, okay. So the premise behind content design, one of the premises is this idea of user research. So instead of getting a brief and piling into writing content, it's the idea, part of the idea is that there is this phase at the start, which she terms a discovery phase, which is used for actually finding out what it is the audience wants, and I guess finding out who the audience is, making sure that you know, and to kind of remove this idea of assumptions. This is a real problem, I think, or certainly was back when I first started working for agencies. This idea that an agency knows everything. We can do straight lines and create logos and things like that. So we know what's best for the audience. And you know, I've been involved with lots of projects where you just take a brief, do what you think is right, send it to the client, and off it goes. And in many ways, the problem is that you are satisfying the clients. The client might be happy with what you do, but at no point has anyone actually spoken to the audience. So this idea of content design and having this discovery phase is really about not making those assumptions and actually speaking to the audience and finding out what they want and how they behave. So that could come through having workshops, so inviting people in to do co-design workshops where you ask them to get involved with the design process. You could do surveys. You could have interviews either in person or by phone. It's trying to collect as much information as possible. And then you can, if you're creating a web project that already exists, then you can use search terms. And how do people get to your website via Google? What do they search for? When they're on your website, what do they search for? What routes do they take through the site?
So I assume that all this kind of went down in the GDS project. As in how much of it? Because that sounds like a massive year-long effort or years and years, or what was the timescale on it? I'm just generally interested.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly, but GDS was the Government Digital Service and still is. So and the project initially was to create gov.uk. So it was the website. It's the one that you've no doubt used for passports.
Everything, I think. This is probably wrong because surely I remember it before, but I can only think of the gov site as like the portal like it is now.
I mean, you were a young man, Tom.
Well, youngish, but yeah.
that's why. It was, I don't remember exactly the year, but it would have been early this decade, 2012, 2013.
It seems like a humongous undertaking.
Well, it was, and that's why it's become so influential and like such an incredibly difficult task. So there was, you know, they basically pulled in the best of the best from around the country to set up these different digital teams. And a lot of the practices that they put into place are now quite common, including this idea of content design. But content design isn't just about writing as well. It's so that happens to be, you know, I do podcasts and videos and stuff like that as well. But my main thing is writing. But I think that content design is interesting because it encourages people to, or content designers to, think about what's right for the audience. So mm-hmm. instead of five paragraphs explaining how to do a particular task to a user, then could that all have been done with a quick sign-up form or with a chart or something like that? So it's to try and think about what would actually convey.
So it's
this
not just words, it's layout and design and yeah. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but yeah. So I've been reading that book.
Yeah.
And found it really interesting. I recommend it. And it also touches on plain English, which is a big thing of mine. But there's a quote from the book, which is this idea of not dumbing down, it's opening up. So the idea of plain English, which is, in my opinion, it's about clarity and understanding who you're writing for and trying to communicate with them as clearly as possible. Some of the criticism of that approach is sometimes this idea, well, you're just dumbing down. You're just making it really basic. There's no room for creativity, no room for any kind of like creative flair. But I like this idea that it's not dumbing down, it's opening up. So by writing in plain English, you are opening up to a much wider audience. More people can understand what it is you're trying to convey, and therefore you can reach a wider audience.
Yeah. I think I was reading a blog by Dave Trott. For people who don't know him, he's sort of an advertising land. But he was talking about one of his blogs about the fact that the audience doesn't know the brief. So as in, you know, when you're writing a website and you're thinking, oh, should this be more creative? Should it be more words? In actual fact, they don't know what you were told to do. They just want it to work. Be in, I guess, an advertising sense, it's they want to be interested by the advertising. But in this sense, it's they want it to be useful. And as you were talking, I was just kind of wondering just how many people or how many projects actually have even like a tiny bit of this research put into them. So even down to like agency websites, I mean, how much do we really think about who's landing on it, how are they going to find the content, you know, what they're going to find useful, and from what point are they going to contact us? I'm sort of jibbering on, my point being that is like 90% of the internet non-research and just done from like a, oh, that looks nice, that what? Works for us point of view. Well, yeah, I imagine it's a yes.
Yeah, almost all of the internet, I would say it's a much higher percentage than that. But you're right. And I think it's part of the reason is it costs money.
Yeah.
And if you want to, you know, spend a few weeks putting the time in to do that research, to get people in to have workshops or to interview people or to even run a survey, which is, you know, quite in theory, quite a quick way of getting some feedback. Still takes time to put together. Are your questions right? How do you get them to the people that you want to get them to?
Say, is the user group right?
Yeah, exactly. It takes time. And so part of the challenge is to persuade whoever it is that's got the money to make that investment and say and make it clear that by doing this, by investing this amount of money up front for a research phase or a discovery phase, you're going to end up with something that actually has a better result or reaches people. In terms of what people want to do, you're right. Like, people don't care. They don't care about the brief that was given to the agency that put the website together. They want to complete a task. Usually people want to get from A to B to do something.
I think it'd be interesting to hear, going back a bit as well, to hear or sort of see maybe in the show notes, an example of not dumbing down, opening up. Just because in my head, I understand what that's saying, but I just, I'd like to see sort of like, in the book, is there like examples of, I assume, of what that content would be?
There are examples in the book, and of course, I haven't got it with me, so I can't give you any out. Just perfect. But even just, if you just think about, we talked about jargon. So mm-hmm. if you think about it in terms of writing, if a sentence is 50 words long, and it contains three ideas wrapped into one, and it's all very difficult to read. And I don't know, let's say it's something like wanting to book a doctor's appointment online. Mm-hmm. And it's written in a way that is quite confusing, and it's hard to read. Then that's quite an important task for someone, particularly someone who isn't particularly digital. Being able to book online could be a life-changing thing for them.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's hostile doing it that way, having that huge long sentence, huge paragraph, is potentially hostile, which we'll come on to hostile content in a second. And it could be avoided by just having, you know, one short sentence or maybe a few words and then a phone number and, you know, a colon, something like that. It's just, I mean, that's a very sort of basic example. Yeah, but it could also be the way that forms are written. And,
it's got me thinking as well, because obviously a lot of what I do day to day, writing ad copy or writing social copy or even for our own channels or clients, but it's got me thinking, how much more should we be doing to sort of to look at the length of text and how we speak and aspects like that. It's interesting.
Well, perhaps
obviously we do that.
I am instead of providing good examples, which I've just failed to do very well, I thought it might be more fun to look at some hostile examples.
Go for it.
So look at it from the other side,
yep.
Purely for entertainment value as opposed to anything else. So I have some pet peeves. Do you have any particular internet pet peeves, Tom?
I don't like overly familiar, friendly content, you know what I mean? You know, like kind of like very chatty. I don't like unsubscribe boxes that make you feel guilty or try and shame you.
We'll come on to that in a second.
No, I think that's about it. My only pet peeve on the internet is websites that are entirely surrounded by so many adverts that you can't load them. I'm looking at you, Sheffield Star.
I mean, I think that's a problem we can't necessarily solve right now. But the ads on websites and particularly auto-playing videos and stuff like that.
That's hostile.
Very hostile. I've got a couple of pet peeves. Bad colour accessibility. So this is where it can be accessibility issue.
Wrong colour text on the wrong colour background type.
Such an easy problem to solve. There are so many ways that sort of online services that people can use that, to check whether two colors are accessible when used together, and it's just a pure case of the designer deciding that this looks better, and who cares what people can whether people can read it or not. Another one is badly written hyperlinks. I still like to use the word hyperlink instead of link because I'm old-fashioned.
Okay, like misdirection.
Well, the most frustrating one is when people just place the link on the words click here. So click here. Well, I can give you an example.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, okay.
How on earth...
Do I know where I'm going?
Do you know where you're going? So there are some... When you're writing a link, there are some basic principles that you need to think about. So first of all, you're right. You need to say where you're going and it needs to mean something. So click here doesn't... If you just see those two words on their own...
You mean like to find out more, click here and have just
a
click? Yeah, fine. Yeah.
and it needs to mean something, and that doesn't mean anything. And part of the reason is that's important is because people scan. We know this. We've known this for many, many years. People scan web pages, and if they're looking for links and like, where do they go next, people are always wanting to go from A to B. If they're just scanning a page and those links jump out and they just say click here, it's just like frustrating. So they need to have some sort of meaning.
Okay.
So an example of that, let's say there's someone's written a brilliant blog post that they want to link to. Don't say check out my brilliant blog post with just the words check out as the link.
Yeah.
An alternative to that is that you would say, and this would be a more accessible link, you would say, this article will help you, and then this is the link bit, this article will help you learn about basic web accessibility. So if you see those links independently on their own, or you hear them, if you're using a screen reader, then it means something.
Yeah, and also, obviously we've got it on the screen in front of us, but just having that extra bit in the blue and the underline actually pulls out the most important bit of the sentence.
Exactly.
So it's a double whammy.
Exactly. So I've written an entire blog post on this many years ago. So I'll write a.
Let's dig that back out again.
I'll put it in the show notes. So there's a couple of pet peeves, but I think my greatest pet peeve is something that you've already mentioned. You talked about it, like the idea of shaming on.
I feel like it's becoming more prevalent as well.
It is extremely prevalent. It's more and more common to see them, particularly if it's blog posts by internet gurus particularly.
Yep.
But also products, people who are trying to sell you a product and they want you on their mailing list, pop-ups. So these are subscription forms where you have the option to, yes, sign up for something or no. And it's the no bit that is becoming more and more hostile. I bet you've read my notes, Sam. You've seen my exciting names for them.
No, go on.
Were you aware of these before? So
I was aware of the first one, but not the second one.
Okay, so there's confirm shaming. So
this is a new one, mate.
This is a word for this process, but also manipulinks.
Yeah.
So links that are trying to manipulate you into...
That rolls off the tongue better.
It does a bit, doesn't it? So let me give you one example, and then we'll play a little game, Tom, because you can't, just to make it clear to the listener, you can't see these examples that I've got in front of me.
I cannot.
How about this? Just as an example of what I mean. This is, I'm not really sure what this is, but I guess it's someone wanting you to sign up to some kind of like leadership course or something like that.
Yeah.
So this is manage IT like a boss. Sign up for our free newsletter to learn more. And then the big button says, do it like a boss. And the alternative, which is your way of saying, no, I'm all right, thank you, is no thanks, I'm not a boss. Very hostile, or immediately just saying to you, your only way of getting rid of this pop-up is to say, no thanks, I'm not a boss. you know, it's just so silly. So I'm going to give you some other examples, Tom. Maybe we can play a game. Maybe you can try and come up with some, without being coarse,
yeah,
come up with some ways of potentially being hostile, and then I'll present you what it really says. So this is for, it's actually self-explanatory, but we have a picture of a hamper, and then it says, "Wait, fancy 13 pounds of free food?" The button says, "Yes, please." What do you think the alternative to saying yes is?
"No, I don't like free food."
That's amazing.
Is that what it
that's
is?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, yes.
1 point to Tom. It's "no, I don't like food." So it's not
even... it's not even free.
It's even more hostile than that. "No, I don't like..." I don't...
This is fun. Let's do another one.
That's the only way that you can get rid of that pop-up without signing up to their email mailing list. The only way you can get rid of that pop-up is by saying, "No, I don't like food.
Okay, yeah.
Hostile content. Next one. I'm gonna shame this one because I know who it's by. This is by Men's Health magazine. So we have, "Get your friends what they really want. Exclusive holiday offer, 99 cents an issue." And then the button is, "Give the gift of Men's Health." That's the sign up button. What do you think the alternative is to that? This is the only way that you can get rid of this pop up.
"I don't want my friends to be healthy."
Not far off. You're good at this, Tom. You're surprisingly good at hostile content. It's, "No thanks. None of my friends or family are worth 99 cents an issue."
It's actually quite funny.
Well, I do, but that's, that is, I do think there is an element of, yeah, you know, that some of these can be so extreme that, that yes, perhaps they are supposed to be funny, but, you know, ultimately they are.
That's not the best, is it?
Do you know what? I think that's actually a good point. So, yeah, you could look at that and say that that's funny, and some of these other examples that are funny, particularly mm-hmm. the food. "No, I don't like food." But one of the responsibilities I think you have as someone creating content is that you do not know who is looking at this. There is a person at the other end of your, you know, your funny piece of hostile content.
Mm-hmm.
So, "No, I don't like food." And sorry to get quite serious in the middle of laughing, but perhaps the person that's reading this has an eating disorder.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or perhaps they have a long-standing allergy to lots of different foods. And mm-hmm. seeing and reading your funny little thing is, you know, in some way gets to something that is actually really important to them. I'm sorry to very quickly switch tones there, but I do think there is a reason for not just assuming. It's not making assumptions about your audience, I guess, to link it back.
So I've just remembered one that I've been seeing quite a lot recently, so it's good to bring it up. It's not so much, I'll read it out to you. So it's The Drum. Sorry for people who read The Drum. "When you read a certain amount of content, this pops up. Come on in, it's free. This isn't a paywall, it's a free wall. We don't want to get in the way of what you came here for, so this will only take a few seconds. And your two options are register now or..."
"Go away."
"No, it's sign in." So your two options are register to sign in or to go away.
Oh, hang on. Explain that to me again.
So
what am I signing up for?
It's The Drum, just to read their articles, which are not, obviously not really free. It's a free wall.
Okay.
But I just find it frustrating that... I don't know, it's just the way it's phrased, like register now or sign in, or essentially that's you.
Although the same thing.
Well, this is what I mean. So it's basically, if you don't register, you can't read, written in a really sort of...
Okay.
I find that hostile way. Like I don't normally have an issue with signing, like giving my email address over for free content, but for some reason I've been resisting this pop-up. Out of annoyance for like about 6 months now.
That's a really interesting point. The fact that you are so annoyed by the pop-up that you're doing the opposite behavior to what they want you to do.
Yeah.
So it's the idea that the content is free as long as you register with an email address or something like that.
So this isn't a paywall, it's a free wall.
Yeah.
So if you don't register, obviously you can't see. I just feel a bit like, no, come on, be honest about it. You want the email, you want the data. Everyone knows that's kind of the way a lot of the web internet works. Why are you writing like a child?
Yeah. What would have made you go, okay, fair enough, yeah, I'll sign up
to see this content.
Yeah, keep it simple.
I know it's exactly the same in a weird way, but to me, for something about it, it's just put me off.
Plain English, Tom.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah,
would have got you in.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you've resisted it.
Also, if the box was just the email box isn't there, it's another click to get through.
Okay.
Oh no, chat roulette.
It's time for your chat roulette story. Shall we? Well, let's start with the news. So, what is this piece of interesting news that you want to share with us?
The news is that Reddit, but they are launching a live video streaming service, which I guess kind of isn't news in itself because there's a lot of that these days. And
who hasn't got one?
Yeah, who hasn't got one? Like Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, everyone's at it. But Reddit, of course, is, I think, kind of known for, it has a community of people that, you know, you can access content on there, I think, that other sites just wouldn't accept. And I think it's one of the, for the users of that site, one of the things they like the most about it is a sort of anonymity and the sort of lack of, I'm going to call it a lack of editorial control, which is very much on purpose, I think. I mean, that's what was sort of, it's like there's like Reddit and then there's like that 4chan site, isn't there, that's horrendous. Yes. And I think Reddit kind of, for me.
And 8chan, which is even worse.
Which is kind of mad what 12chan is like, but it kind of like straddles, I think Reddit sort of straddles between like Facebook and 4chan in terms of like things you can find. Anyway, so they've launched this live streaming service, which is going to run sort of similarly to how their content runs right now, which for those who don't know, a user will post a topic or a discussion and based on the up and down votes and comments, it will rise to either the front page or in that subreddit, it will rise up. And the live streaming system is going to be pretty similar, really. It's a kind of simple, any user can go on, start a stream and people will vote it up and down. And I guess where the chat roulette reference comes from is this ability to skip through. Just if you go onto a broadcast, you don't like it, you'll be able to skip through and I guess vote up and down as you go. And that was kind of the chat roulette way of doing things, wasn't it? Is that you logged on, so you pressed a button and you didn't know what you were getting type thing. So,
but that was a that was all that was for. I think that's a crucial difference. Yeah. So Reddit is obviously has existed for many years. A huge thing is, you know, I've always thought it was kind of like a just a forum, really. So it's like a huge popular forum with you know, a few interface and you know.
So I think that's why I found it interesting, because to me it's very much like you just said, it's anonymous in the main part forum, and I think it works really well for that. This to me feels a bit shoehorny. Like, as in,
shoehorny is a terrific word.
I know, I don't think it is a word, but yeah,
especially in the context of
chat roulette. I feel like they're just trying to add a product in that they think that people want to use in an effort to, I'm not gonna say stay relevant, because I think they're probably fine, but they're obviously like everyone chasing ad dollars, aren't they, on ad pounds. And we've got a stat here that, you know, that streaming is estimated to be worth $70 billion by 2021. So anyone seeing that would probably want to try and get involved in it. And I just wonder, I don't know, I think my question was going to be, I wonder how much risk there is for Reddit to launch that, because of the nature of the website and the controversy it has occasionally courted. I can't see how it goes well.
No, I know what you mean. It feels
why would someone want to advertise on that?
Yeah, it's got, there are risks involved. I think part of the problem as well is that Reddit has quite a clear point of difference to the other really big platforms. Mm-hmm. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they've all launched very similar services, live streaming, stories, all of the things that you can kind of find on all of the platforms. But Reddit had a point of difference in that it was more like an old fashioned, or is more like an old fashioned forum, you know, with the upvoting, downvoting thing and a few other functionality quirks. But, you know, it's a different, but it does feel a bit like all of the platforms are gradually kind of all doing the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, I was always skeptical of Twitter increasing its limit to, well, in any way really, beyond 140 characters, because I thought, well, that's what makes it what it is. That is what makes it different to all of the other platforms. At some point,
there was a certain craft to getting your message in that space, wasn't there?
Yeah,
and it was kind of a bit of the fun.
And I mean, there still is with 280 characters, and obviously we have like threads and stuff like that now. But I do think it's important to have something that makes you distinguishable from other services. So maybe that's going to be.
It does, yeah. So it just feels like a weird.
Doing it for
something that no one asked for. Well,
yeah.
I don't think they did. Like, as in, it just feels like, why are you doing it?
Yeah, well, presumably because everyone else is doing it and they're making money out of it, potentially.
Yeah, so it will be interesting to see how it goes, actually.
That will be interesting. But far more interesting to me is to find out about your experience with Chat Roulette back in the day. So perhaps we should actually say what Chat Roulette is, because I imagine
Chat Roulette was,
some of the listeners will be even younger than you.
It was a very basic website.
It's the early days of live streaming, really.
Yeah, very grainy webcam or whatever it happened to be. It was mainly used in the end for people like, we use it a lot at university for a laugh, like, and you'd log on and you'd click a button and God knows what you're going to see. I mean, someone is on the other end of the camera, essentially.
A part of a person.
Yeah, I mean, you are, flip window, you'd have yours on and you'd press a button and roulette, the roulette wheel would spin and you would end up on
a chat.
A lot of times, you end up with a lot of, like we were, a lot of lads at university looking for something funny to laugh at and just quickly skipping. And then occasionally you'd find something funny or something, what's the word, what's a nice way of putting?
Saucy is what
it is. Saucy, yes, a very saucy.
Or deeply unpleasant.
Shoehorny. So there's nothing really that exotic to tell you really, other than we had a few laughs.
I think it's definitely an example of...
Still exist.
I have no idea. You can have a look while I'm talking. A preface for what was to come, in that you basically, you cannot trust people on the internet.
No, you cannot.
Give them a service of some kind and they will end up either showing their private parts or abusing other people in some kind of way, which was a lot of, there was a lot of that with chat roulette as well. As soon as the idea came about, it was a bit of a fad. But, you know, you just press a button and then you're in a live chat with someone that you never met before. That is not going to end well.
So I believe it looks like it still exists. It launched in 2009, so it's 10 years old now.
10 years old.
The website is there, but I'm not going to let it access my camera.
All right. Well, I think we'll call it quits there, Tom. Thanks for your company.
And yeah, it was good. Good fun.
So if you'd like to subscribe to the Clever Content Podcast, and I really do recommend that you do. I'm very biased, but, you know, it seems like a sensible decision to me. You can go to any app, really, that plays podcasts. You can tell us what you think about the show, send us some feedback, or tell us a topic that you think we should cover. You can do that by emailing info@contentod.co.uk. And you can find out more about Content OD. Oh, the newsletter. Tom, your weekly newsletter is full of interesting links to content-related matters from around the internet.
Please do subscribe. We do tend to share a few of them on our social channels. So if you want a little sort of tester, head to Twitter and have a look at some of the links that have been going out. But yeah, very brief. It's usually between 5 and 10 links, the best things that not just me, everyone else here finds, and we all put together and send out for everyone to read. The podcast is also on Spotify, just as a shout out.
Well, look at that. That's it. Until next time.